You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I'm on my sixth cough drop this morning.
I've been just chugging ginger tea, yeah. Like chugging it.
I've seen you blow your nose a couple of times. I feel tremendous.
Good for you.
This is the best I've felt. J&J all the way.
Oh my God. Pfizer.
Did you guys watch any of Elon Musk on SNL?
No.
I saw the entire show without commercials. That's how they do it on Peacock. He revealed that he has Asperger's.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a bombshell. And there was a really good line there, although the Asperger's helps explain a bit. He's like, so I've reinvented electronic cars and I'm going to put people on Mars. And you guys thought I would be normal? Because he's not, like, he's a bit of a weirdo, a little bit, but I appreciated the attempt and it was just cool to see him there, but it was odd.
I saw that Dave Chappelle, in reaction to some Saturday Night Live cast members not liking it, said on Joe Rogan's podcast that you simply can't be woke enough today. There is no such thing as people objected to the idea of Musk being on Saturday Night Live. And I know during the pandemic, this should bother you, that the minimum wage is so embarrassingly low, and during the pandemic billionaires have become richer and richer, and he's the face of that as the richest man in the world. Hell, I read that Bill Gates, in his divorce, that he will lose half his money and still, because of the pandemic, be worth about as much as he would have been worth before the pandemic, like the way the math on that works, because billionaires made so much money during this. But I do wonder why Saturday Night Live has to be a cathedral that you can't invite somebody to who might be polarizing, who might not, who you might have trouble with some of his work practices and what. I don't think that has to be a cathedral. It's a place. And I know Billy Crystal, this is where we are with some of this stuff. Billy Crystal got headlines recently for saying that comedy is a minefield now. And he was saying, and I understand why it is. Like but the headlines were just comedy is a minefield now, so that you could go after the old white guy like he sounds like he's whimpering, so that younger generations, all he was, and he's right, of course it's a minefield.
But
and
Billy had his run. I mean, it does sound like an old man.
He got him fairly aggregated. He got him fairly aggregated.
He was not complaining. He was just saying, I understand why and how that it's happened, and I'm with Neil Brennan on this. Be a better comedian if you don't like that some people are sensitive. But I understand why Chappelle, too, and I don't think this is cultural. I think it is absolutely generational, that the outraging of others on social media among young people has made comedians, older comedians, look at it and be like, knock it off. Give us some room in this one arena where we're supposed to push some boundaries.
But specific to what you were saying about SNL and the Elon Musk thing, I think this is Trump PTSD, because a lot of the cast members now have images that'll endure when he was candidate Trump, and it kind of still felt like it was a joke. He was doing like a Drake parody, and no one really knew at the time what they were dealing with, and it kind of normalized him to a degree. And a lot of the comedians and cast members were super embarrassed in retrospect of their affiliation with that episode. And considering Elon Musk's stances on some things and where he was with the pandemic at its inception, they're worried that history will also reflect poorly on their association with that episode. I kind of get it.
I think like it shows how SNL, which to me and my generation, I've never watched SNL live. I don't think many of my friends do. I think you see a couple clips on Twitter the next day and some of the funny stuff resonates, but it does not have the same cultural cachet as like 20 years ago. But it's seeing someone who has a online following, who is like a cult personality, like Elon Musk, who is not famous because they're funny or famous because they're a good speaker, who is just famous because he is a businessman, get this platform. It seems like SNL is just doing it because they know people will watch it. And so it's a little sad in that sense. And I also think, to Dan's point earlier, like the younger generation isn't outraged because, well, they like to be outraged. They're, a lot of the comedy is just of 20 years ago is just punching down all the time. And there is now a backlash to comedians and people who have platforms constantly punching down and that no longer being okay. And I think that that's in general a good thing.
And let's also not pretend like SNL has not decided to exclude celebrities from hosting that show before, from like a personality standpoint, where they just welcome someone into their environment and they're just a complete wrong fit. Like you hear people who've worked on that show say that, like, you know, Justin Bieber, for instance, was a problem and just dealing with him day to day. So even like from a personality standpoint, I don't know if they were anticipating that Elon Musk was going to be the most fun to work with or that he would make for a good show. Like, you can object to someone being on the show for reasons beyond their politics or whatever their public stances are.
Michael Che and Pete Davidson, both beforehand, did not object. The grousing was not coming from them. Mike is saying, I understand the grousing. And what I would say to all of you is the following, because these are the business decisions that have to be made all the time. As television ratings tank all over the place because people live off of the grid, desperate television entities whose job it is not to be a voice or the soul for America. It's not Saturday Night Live's job to make America feel better about itself. The business of Saturday Night Live is get eyes and get people talking, and some of that is going to be on the edge. And this particular person, I understand where the objections come from, but I sort of shrug my shoulders, if not on television in a comedy show while trying to get ratings, then where? Because what are we turning Saturday Night Live into? Like, when did it become church or America's soul? It's just a show that's on late night television when no one watches live television anymore. And they're bringing on a guy that is bringing attention to their product by being somewhat edgy, who isn't an entertainer, isn't a personality, maybe problematic down later in the future in ways that are uncomfortable to us, but this is a show that has hosted Trump several times.
Right.
He's hosted that show several times, and Musk isn't said to be that.
No, he isn't. But I understand where it's coming from, but I felt like it was another public opportunity for them to voice their displeasure
being used with the
Donald Trump thing, because there were people waving their arms around saying, hey, this isn't a good look for them. And they were used, like, hey, reputable comedians. They brought Amy Poehler back for that episode. You don't think she's embarrassed by her association dressed up in a chicken costume right next to Donald Trump?
But
January 6th, I mean, if it wasn't his four-year term, January 6th really changed about how that's looked upon.
But I also see it from Saturday Night Live viewpoint, where they are in desperate times right now, and to Dan's point, they need eyeballs, and they'll do anything to get those eyeballs. And if it's Elon Musk, then it's Elon Musk.
Oh, I went to it.
But I know, but the comedians need to knock it off.
Not just eyeballs. And incidentally, I said Gates before, I meant Bezos. Forgive me for that. Bezos lost half his money in the divorce, but made so much money during the pandemic that he's worth just as much. We're fascinated by rich people. I'm not just talking about eyeballs that night. We're talking about it beforehand. We're talking about it afterward. And that's what Saturday Night Live used to be. It hasn't been that in a long time. And so I don't know where the lines and boundaries are right now in the new 2021. But when Chappelle is out here telling you, hey, you can't be too woke nowadays, and he's objecting to the idea because Chappelle is saying to you that comedy exists to push those particular boundaries. And Chappelle has said some problematic stuff, punching down transgenders. So he gets old too, and everyone gets old. I've told you before.
And he's also going to Joe Rogan to voice his displeasure.
And Joe Rogan is having all sorts of problems with Spotify already because of some of the stuff that takes away freedoms. But I've told you, one of the things that's been interesting to watch has been the descent of angry, bitter Bill Maher, specifically with these guys. It's such a small fraternity, Stugatz, and these guys, it's like lubricant in their lives, the way they need the laughter, the things that take you to a stage to perform that most vulnerable things. In entertainment, everyone says stand-up comedy is the hardest thing. It's the writing, it's the performance, it's the expectation of funny, it's you on stage by yourself, and there's a bravery in it. Bill Maher craves laughter. The pandemic has not, he's sitting there on that HBO show, which has been a monster, a 20-year run for, it's just crazy the run that guy has had, and he has starved to go do the, you know, Cuckoo Hut in Mobile, Alabama, because of the need for an audience's laughter. He has descended into this angry bitterness where he gets angry at the audience if it doesn't laugh at the right time during his television show. And he's yelling at clouds. He really did a great 10 minutes on cryptocurrency the other day. Explained to me a bunch of stuff that I did not know. Whether you agree with his premise or not, he did a great 10 minutes on it. And I'm like, man, I miss that smart guy. And to me, it wasn't a coincidence that he's headed back to the clubs now. And he's happier because he's headed back to feed off of that laughter. But you have these comedians like Chappelle saying, hey, if you keep closing out the real estate on even the good comedians, where Billy Crystal can't say comedy is a minefield right now and I understand it, and the headlines all around the country become old man Crystal complaining about comedy being a minefield. Like, if you can't have some edge, if you've got some fear in these guys, it's really hard to do comedy. It is testing comedians, and the lesser ones are falling by the wayside because they can't, they're not good enough to do it.
So just put interesting people on Saturday Night Live. What's wrong with that? That's what I'm saying.
To your point, I agree. And I did think that this was an opportunity for the cast to speak in. Like Woody said, you're inviting someone. It's like us doing our show, and then just we bring somebody in from the outside. It does change the work dynamic. Now make that person candidate Trump. So I understand what they were doing and seizing on that opportunity. And I'm not sure that there were really that many holdouts with it. They just took the opportunity to speak on it. But there is, with the whole Joe Rogan sphere, a money-making enterprise by being the dangerous comic that, by standards of 20 years ago, isn't really all that dangerous. It's just calling out hypocrisies on both sides. It's proven to be lucrative. Andrew Schultz has become a massive draw because he kind of does that. If you go on Joe Rogan's podcast, that it's been explained to us, that's the new Johnny Carson calling you over to the couch. If a comedian does Joe Rogan's podcast and gets to sit down and be comfortable and say, hey, I'm not just like this Hollywood liberal type of comedian, I'm also aware of the hypocrisies, people gravitate to those, and it's big for their business.
I find fascinating that one of the things that has happened at the evolution of television, Stugatz, if you read about the late night wars a long time ago, you had Jay Leno hiding in a closet during an executive meeting where they were deciding who the replacement was going to be for Johnny Carson, and it was an esteemed place, and David Letterman badly wanted the job, and they went with an antiseptic guy who would play to middle America, who used to be hugely funny, but kind of sold his soul to be a softer version and have Johnny Carson's throne where people came. Jimmy Fallon, we have watched this happen over the years. Jimmy Fallon was ill-equipped to do politics, and so The Tonight Show has been ruined in that climate. The Tonight Show does not matter the way that it used to, and Mike is right that Joe Rogan's podcast has at least in part become so popular because that's a safe space for comedians, and it now is even less of a safe space. I wonder if you had an honest conversation with Joe Rogan, whether he would tell you he regrets that he has given up some of his freedom to Spotify, because some of these episodes of Joe Rogan have disappeared because he wants to do something that is free. And careful with that in corporate culture. You're listening to something right now that taught you that you can only be so free in corporate culture.
This is like aside from SNL, because I frankly, like, I don't really care who hosts SNL or not. But I don't think that it's a bad thing that we're even having this discourse about what jokes are funny or what comedians can get away with now, in air quotes, and what, you know, actually causes harm. Because if you're talking about Dave Chappelle, who historically, yes, he made some really inappropriate, harmful comments about transgender people. And now in 2021, we see transgender legislation in a whole handful of states. Those things are, like, I'm not saying it's Dave Chappelle's fault, but those things go hand in hand when you have a group of people who are constantly shit on by mainstream media and mainstream comedy. And so I think you need to be able to have these conversations about what is actually funny, what is comedy, what can we allow, and what actually causes more harm than good, and where can we draw that line? And I think that, you know, it's there's no answers, but it's important to have that conversation at the very least, and people not to get offended by the conversation.
Stugatz, that's your line. It's an important conversation.
Glad we're having it.
And I'm glad we're having it.
Stugatz!
I like the idea, Stugatz, that everything that ended up happening here to me is the way that this should play out in a slippery climate where we're all trying to find out where change and evolution will take us, where you have some members uncomfortable, and we know about it, of Saturday Night Live. You have some members who aren't uncomfortable, and they say so publicly. And then Elon Musk does that. That, to me, is television doing its job. Elon Musk, it's you being on the edge of something, everyone free to voice their opinions, everyone free to have discerning opinions about it. Joe Rogan and Dave Chappelle talking about it over here. We're talking about it over there. People argue about it, and all of a sudden, all you're getting out of that is, hey, look, Elon Musk, somebody who has a personality, doesn't seem to have a whole lot there. Certainly as an entertainer, there doesn't seem to be a lot there. They built something out of nothing around Elon Musk. Not just a conversation, but a conversation, skits, comedy, and they made their show feel relevant like it hasn't felt relevant in many years because of all the changes in television that make live television something that people aren't consuming unless it's sports.
Did they make him funny? Did they make him likable?
No.
Did they work enough around him to do those things?
No, I mean, I think he made himself likable in that he took the stab at it. There wasn't really a lot of making fun of Elon Musk. He made fun of himself, and it was humanizing the revelation that he has Asperger's. I think people could connect with that. But yeah, he's not exactly a people person, nor would you expect someone like that to be one.
Right. But guys, we understand this, right? It's a legendary comedy show. Someone is supposed to get out there and deliver an opening monologue that's supposed to make you laugh really, really hard. Those days have passed, obviously. And so people are still hanging on to that. That's what they want that show to be. Comedians, fans, that's what they want that show to be. It can no longer be that.
I don't think so, though. Has Kanye hosted it? Like, it's entertainers. Peyton Manning, it's athletes. Charles Barkley has done it several times. Charles Barkley has said a bunch of problematic things, and we just keep sort of like walking past that and shrugging our shoulders on Charles Barkley because he's allowed a certain freedom that no one else in American entertainment seems to be allowed. I am legitimately confused, Stugatz, as to what the right thing is here. But I do ask you guys
again. The right
thing
is ratings. That's what the right thing is.
I guess we have
for the people who run that show, that's what the right thing is, Dan.
Okay. I don't know what the right thing is, Stugatz. I'm glad you know what the right thing is. I'm not sure what the right thing is as all of the rules change, as we try to be more decent to people, as there's a fight in America over facts. And again, Stugatz, this is not a small thing that you have a lot of poverty all over the world, and guys like this person walk into that setting with more riches than you can possibly imagine and have problematic issues in their workforce. Have, you know, in the case of other rich people, you've got all sorts of climate issues. But to me, when this person is chosen to do this thing, all the more people become aware of, oh, wait a minute, behind every great fortune, there is a great crime. They become aware that Elon, how many people didn't even know before this that Saturday Night Live introduced them to the idea of, hey, Elon Musk didn't just get rich with altruism. He didn't get rich with purity. There is stuff there on the path. How many people are introduced to facts about Elon Musk because of the conversation? I'm glad, you know, it's an important conversation. I'm glad we're having
TV's changed in previous years. A billionaire tech CEO doesn't really become a superstar, and SNL kind of makes them for a nation. Now, I believe this was the first SNL that had a live link that was fully endorsed by NBC that you could view it live across the world, because it works the other way. They get the rub off of Elon Musk, or the whole concept of celebrity and what people need in terms of getting their message out. Elon Musk is never going to have a bigger audience than when he does when he sends out a tweet. SNL certainly needs Elon Musk more than he needs it. It's changed.
What is television's responsibility on this? What, not just, I'm not talking about Elon Musk. What is a Saturday night comedy show on television? What is its responsibility? Because I told you about
we
that.
We ask ourselves this question a lot when it comes to certain guests. Remember, we booked R. Kelly and then we didn't book R. Kelly. I think each show has to ask the questions, and that is certainly not a perfect analogy by any stretch of the imagination. Elon Musk is not R. Kelly, but they need to have these discussions. SNL is a left-leaning show. There were people, they had to listen to their workforce, but Lorne Michaels is also the establishment there, and I think ultimately he made the call. I think the numbers will bear that out for that show.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Mickelson came back to Earth, asshole. Whittingham.
Oh, did he? Yeah, I saw, like, I got so much shit on Twitter on Thursday.
I'm sure you did.
Because he was like 7 under on the first day. What did he finish at?
I think plus three, maybe.
Yes.
Yes.
Bad. I'm telling you, bad.
Yeah, he's bad.
Use that Saudi money to motivate him.
He's bad. I didn't hear a word, a peep out of you when he was 7 under, Smitty. All right.
I don't care how good he is. I'm just saying, I'm not giving Phil a $30 million payday if it's up to me. Do you see Rory yesterday, Stu? He had a weekend.
He was great.
Rory's back.
Did he ever go away?
Yeah, he had a pretty big slump in there.
I guess, but I don't know if the Wells Fargo means you're back. I mean, it's like a U.S. Open, Masters, Open Championship, PGA. I don't think anyone's ever won the Wells Fargo Championship, and I said to myself, they are back. I mean, I could be wrong. But
I don't even think he's won that many smaller tournaments the last 5 years. I could be wrong.
I think you are.
Is the Wells Fargo, or like the name of golf tournaments similar to the name of baseball arenas, where like they used to have a meaning when you won like the Valero, but do they change so much? Or do they have staying power?
The Valspar
Open. Well, what was it before that? Because I think they've always had sponsored events. It was the Kemper Open going way back when. So they've always been sponsored. The Masters not sponsored. So I think those...
The majors are never sponsored, but like kind of like the tournaments underneath.
Was the Waste Management Open ever known as like the Phoenix Open?
Maybe. I'll check.
That's the sixth major. The unofficial.
You're right.
There's an unofficial fifth and Waste Management unofficial sixth.
Yeah, it's the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So Phoenix Open is still in the title, but I guess.
But no, there was a time, Mike is right, where it was
colloquially
just
known.
Right. What? Yeah. What?
Oh, what? Jesus Christ.
What?
Oh, what? My.
Just came out of your mouth. Are you okay? There was a time when it was just the Phoenix Open, yes.
But colloquially.
Yes.
It's known as the Waste Management Open.
Colloquially, yes, it is. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
That's just known as the tournament where everyone goes and gets shit-faced the weekend of the Super 16th. Bowl.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
It's
hell
also yeah. Like, it's also top of Mike's sports bucket list for some reason. Like, yeah. I hear him talk more about the Waste Management Open than any other sporting event. Like, it's not like, oh, I want to go, you know, to the Olympics. I want to go to the Summer Olympics and watch, like, the Olympic sprinters. No, I want to go to the Waste Management Open above all else.
Me and Mike desperately both want to go there. I got good news for you, Mike.
It's not on Super Bowl week anymore.
Someone did a sponsorship with the Waste Management Open, 16th hole, by the way. Sports book. DraftKings.
And you know Bryson's got to play it. Yeah. I like the destination athletic events that are just built around drinking. It's why Whitty and I went to the darts.
The darts.
Oh, the darts.
You've never been to the Kentucky Derby, which is like the pinnacle of drinking sports.
You'll be happy to know that my brother-in-law and I have already booked an RV. The Dega Derby doubleheader happening next year. We go from Talladega and we drive up to Louisville and we watch the Kentucky Derby. That is a quite of a variance of outfits that I need to pack for this trip, but it is happening. The Dega Derby double.
It's like you're two different people. I mean, Dega to the Derby, right?
And also the same person because I think I'm going to be the first Latino in recorded history to hit up both of those events consecutively.
The Monday after that is going to be really hard
for
you.
I can't wait. Yeah.
It's going to be unpleasant. You thought the red eye from Vegas was sad?
You should take Monday off.
Wait till you get off of the RV after that double.
Yeah, I got to make that into a podcast series. The Dega Derby double.
You can definitely wear the same outfit to Talladega as you can to the Derby if you stand in the infield. There is such a wide variance of men's outfit choices. You can have a completely shirtless man in basketball shorts drunk off of his ass, or a very dapper man in a three-piece suit drunk off of his ass at the Kentucky Derby in the infield. It's insane.
I would actually say go dapper to Talladega. Just completely stick out there. Then go to Kentucky Derby with the full-on hat and decor of the Kentucky Derby.
Turn it on its head. Either way, I'm drunk off of my ass. Does my ass fall off because I am so drunk? Or do I separate from my own ass because I've been drinking so heavily?
I think this
you're
show...
You're so drunk that you're off your ass.
Oh, so I like just fall to the ground? So I'm just standing up. Just standing up and drinking.
Yes.
I just want the RV to pull up right here on Monday morning. Is that possible? Yes.
You want to
I want to see you
double?
Pile out of that RV. Yeah. No, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, no thanks. I'm going to wait for you to get back to me on it.
You can get a real window into our behind-the-curtain soul around here in terms of just grabbing a couple of details here and there, what is happening in someone's life. But I am questioning the judgment of Mike right now in a way I haven't before. Not just because of this, but combined with the Miami Seaquarium and some of the decisions you're making. Like, how did the decision get made on I'm going to do Talladega and the Derby, and I'm going to go with my brother-in-law, and it's going to be an RV?
Dega Derby sounds like a wonderful trip.
The Dega Derby
not?
Double, Dan.
Yeah.
And we fantasize about doing this every year. So my brother-in-law is from Daytona. So... Whiskey and Roe Blacks is in his blood, right? Same as mine. You know me. Big gearhead. Love the blue deuce, even though I'm a little upset. Kozlowski hasn't been in a blue vehicle in quite some time. So I keep calling him the blue deuce. And if you're 27, you're like, what is this boomer talking about? Either way, I digress. I want to do the Dega Derby double because Talladega is the biggest party on the NASCAR circuit. Many would say this. And the Derby is obviously all sorts of pomp and circumstance and mint juleps and people running on porta potties. I want to be there for that. The same way I want to be there at 16 at the Waste Management Open, also getting drunk off my ass. See, there is a tie that binds all these major sporting events for me, Dan. And then it's that. I am getting really pissed drunk at all of them.
You're a bit of a hipster in this regard. Are you going to have in the RV your suit hanging?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not going to go to the. Yeah, I'm not going to go see the horsies at Kentucky Derby and not be dressed to the nines. Do we get into the origin of why it's the nines, by the way?
Do you know? Put it on the poll,
Guillermo. I'm going to be dressed to the tens.
At Levitard Show.
Stepping it up.
Do you know the origins of what it means to be dressed to the nines?
I think you're going for ponies, not horses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, well, I'm horse culture is kind of icky to me. I'm just going for the mint juleps. I've never actually had a mint julep. It sounds refreshing and an amazing party drink if you're trying to approach a woman.
You know, you could just go to a bar and get a mint julep. I mean,
yeah, but who wants to be that guy? Like, I'm going to go to Las Rosas in Alapata and be like, hey, you got any mint juleps?
Well, Jessica told you the mint julep is dramatically overrated. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Is the mint julep overrated? Yes or no? Or properly rated because it sounds a little too syrupy sweet. I don't like my drinks too. And that doesn't seem to match with whatever it is, whatever what the brown you're pouring down your gullet in Talladega.
Right. I want to be on the infield for Dega, but I want to be with the highfalutin folk for the Kentucky Derby. All of this, Dan, is a means of training my body for the Formula One race that is coming to Miami, because paddock parties are the biggest party. You think a Super Bowl is something. Dan, if you've ever gone to an F1 race and you've been to the parties, the yachts that got to be in town for that got to be out of this world. I saw Jerry Jones's yacht, by the way. It's docked here in Miami. Impressive.
And pull up to Hard Rock Stadium, these yachts.
I think they're trying to build a moat around the track so they can have some yachts in there. I'm not exactly, there's not a body of water that leads to Miami Gardens, I don't think, but
there's a canal.
Really? So Jerry Jones's yacht is going to have to go down the canal. I would love that.
In Miramar, like behind Roy's house.
Jerry Jones's yacht.
I don't think the Miramar waterways or the Opa-locka waterways are going to be equipped for Jerry Jones's yacht.
I pulled the Huey because, I was on a terrible boat ride. The seas were chopping at like 6 feet and everybody on the boat got sick. And so we rode the channel back and we pulled up to Jerry Jones's yacht and we did a U-ey just to look around. And there were like three people in black t-shirts and utility belts putting two fingers on their ear. Like they were all talking about us.
Because the drunk guys who clearly didn't belong there in their little rowboat. How big was the boat you were in?
Let me say, my in-laws take boating very seriously. It's got a hull, which makes it a yacht, Dan. Did you know that? All you need is a hull.
So it's a yacht. Well, I just saw you on Izzy's boat.
Yeah. I don't want to put Izzy's boat out there, but it's not the Mekris boat.
But that's the boat I imagined you in as you approached Jerry.
Yeah, because we were a bunch of seasick shitheads. But yeah, this boat's nice. It's cobalt.
Stugatz, I wanted to ask you about the ending for Albert Pujols in Anaheim. What were your thoughts as Albert Pujols? It was a bit unusual to see a Hall of Famer, a legend, a guy who only has half a year left on his contract, not get a glorious ending with the team we're all assuming he was going to end with. He's been a below average player for a good long time now. They've been paying a below average player $20 and $25 million a year for a long time now. David Sampson has mentioned a number of times that no one in baseball believes that Albert Pujols is the age that he says he is.
He's batting 198. He signed up. When you sign that contract that takes you into your 40s, you signed up for this kind of ending. You weren't going to get the, you know, the glamorous ending here. You're 41. You're batting 198. You had a bad year last year and they kept you around. I think the sad thing is no one wants him. Like, there was a time where everyone wanted Albert Pujols, and now no one wants him. And I would tell you, if I'm a team contending, Dan, I would take that bat, I would stick it in my dugout, and I would bring it out in a big spot in the playoffs, because I believe Albert Pujols could still deliver a big home run in a big spot. If I'm the Marlins, the Mets, any team in the NL East, because they're all in it, I would get that bat, I'd put it in my dugout.
Okay.
That guy's got a lot of home runs for his career, does he not, Dan? Almost 700, I think.
You love the names, and again, he is dramatically wins above replacement. He is a below average player by any measurement and had become a headache evidently because he didn't want to go to the bench and stay on the bench, didn't want to Joe Madden, he was criticizing his managerial skills, he was battling with authorities. Now David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez both thought it was shameful because I'm assuming from a player's Hall of Fame player's perspective, they didn't understand why you wouldn't just eat another half season of Albert Pujols. But the Angels evidently thought that what he was doing was pretty poisonous and pretty corrosive because, Stugatz, they just embarrassed him. They just embarrassed Albert Pujols. They're not allowing Albert Pujols.
He's embarrassing himself, though. He's batting 198. He's a career 300 hitter. Like, he's a shell of himself.
Everybody's batting 198, though. In this modern baseball, everybody just hits home runs. 198 is not that crazy. There are plenty of guys in the league
that's
bad. Still...
198 is bad.
Dude, I'm telling you, Trumbo a couple years ago hit 40 home runs batting like 210. It's not that crazy.
Chris, when you said that, he's 40-something years old.
But he's Albert Pujols.
He's batting 198. He's a 300. .500 career hitter. I mean, that's not good. You're trying to make the argument that 198 is good.
Again, though, the batting average isn't the thing that you need to be looking at. He has not been a .300 hitter since he was a Cardinal. The thing that you need to be looking at is he is below average by a lot, Stugatz. They've been carrying him around, and nobody wants him for a reason if he could actually help somebody, because he has been spent for a long time. But my question to you is, how much indignity are you supposed to eat if you're the Angels and a guy is testing all of your leadership people and saying he won't go to the bench and he's not going to retire? He's not going to do it. You're pressing on his
pride. Then you retire him, Dan. If he's going to be a problem and he's going to bat 198 while being a problem, then retire him if he's not willing to accept a role on the bench. That's it. To me, it's that. I don't care what you've done. They've kept him around 5 years longer than they probably should have. I mean, Albert should be grateful to that organization for giving him the contract that they gave him. He has no business being in baseball right now, this but is, I'd still get him. I'd still get that bat in my dugout.
Guys, this is personal, though. What other Hall of Fame great has an ending like this? This just doesn't happen. Something's going on.
And Griffey was on the White Sox at the end. Like, there's a lot of people that go on.
But I bet they let him finish the season with the White Sox. They didn't cut him in the middle of the season and said, get the hell out of here. The craziest part about all this is that this is what it takes for us to talk about the Anaheim Angels. They have Babe Ruth on their roster right now. They have Mike Trout, the best baseball player ever. Yeah. And then this is the juicy story that finally gets us to talk about him.
It's a team of names that can do nothing, huh? Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Joe Maddon, Joe Maddon's glasses.
Yep.
15 can they do 18. Something? Last place team. What are they doing? Are they that good? I'm not convinced about this Trout.
They're not good. They're 15 and 18, and I'm with you on Trout.
Batting .380.
Yeah, so Ohtani, another one.
Yeah, do it in the postseason.
How about just get there? Yeah, to the postseason.
Once he has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are you with Guillermo on about?
Everything he said about Trout.
Mike.
That's
Trout.
Right.
So joke and overrated and okay.
He's Mike Fiers.
I mean, Dan, how can you have this kind of talent, once in a lifetime type talent, and never make the playoffs?
Is he overrated or the best baseball player we've ever seen? Put that on the poll. I bet you the best.
Great
baseball
question.
Player comes
back. Great question by Chris. Dan, is he the best baseball player ever?
He's closer to being that than overrated, is my point.
But if he's not, then he's overrated.
All right. Your thoughts, Deb?
I mean, how am I supposed to talk to you guys when...
He batted 083 in his one postseason appearance.
Yeah.
But you seem to not understand the way baseball works at all to think that somebody's great.
Is it a team game or a stat game?
I do. Put the bat on the ball and hit it.
Can we go back?
He does that a lot.
Yeah.
And not in the postseason.
Not when it counts.
Okay, not when it counts, because they've got a lot of people on that team who aren't nearly as good as him.
Spread the wealth a little. Don't take all the money yourself, Trout. Maybe get some other good pieces in there, and then you build a team.
Yep.
That's how you win. It's a team. Team game.
Billy,
Madden was supposed to figure this all out. Isn't he a genius? What's he up to?
Billy, a few years ago, you wanted A-Rod on the Marlins. So
Do
you want Pujols down here?
Not anymore. Unfortunately, the new regime doesn't seem to be in on those shenanigans that I would like. I will say this. As soon as I thought Pujols was released, I was like, maybe he could come home. I don't know why I said home, because we assumed he was going to be a Marlin for a little bit there. So I was like, maybe he can actually, you know, finish out this contract in a Marlin uniform. By the way, what a blessing, huh? To have missed out on that deal. God, that would have been a disaster for this organization.
But every fan of every baseball team did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
They did that, right?
Well, of every bad team.
You think about it. Just Albert Pujols.
Well, I'm not clear on what your opinion is, because you had the very strong opinion, and then you had the very strong opinion of he doesn't belong anywhere in baseball, get out of here, but I want him in the postseason.
Oh, I do.
But is just as bad in my dugout.
He's got one more home run in him, Dan.
He does. One more big homer in him, Dano. I mean, he does. You know he does. He gets a storybook ending. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Put that bat in my dugout. Mets, go get him.
I can't keep track of the number of opinions you have had in this segment that are awful and contradictory.
I've had all of them. Every opinion
you basically just urinated all over all. You marked your spot like a dog on all the Pujols opinions. You might as well end this segment by just coming over here, lifting up your leg on my microphone and pissing.
Stugatz is right.
About what? About which part?
Everything.
Okay. Stugatz.
He can't be right about everything because he's got 10 different contradictory opinions.
What?
He can't play anymore. Get rid of him. I want him.
He can't play anymore. What he can do is limp up to the batter's box. It'd still give you a big home run in a big spot. That's all I'm saying. That's what he could do. Everyday player? No. Big homer, big spot postseason?
Mm-hmm.
Could still muster one up.
Gibson moment.
Yep. Willis Reed.
If you want, Dan, I have the origins of Dressed to the Nines.
Please, yes.
He will take anything to get us out of this.
I mean,
right
anything.
Now.
Anything. You could come over here and shit on my lap, and it would be better than what Stugatz just did.
Man, just urinate
on one theory
mind.
Has it that tailors use 9 yards of material to make a suit, or according to some authors, a shirt. The more material you had, the more kudos you accrued, although 9 yards seems generous, even for a fop. Another commonly repeated explanation comes from the exquisitely smart uniforms of the 99th Regiment of Foot, which was raised in 1824.
So glad you're reading those now.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.